anything to you, she said, and I thought, you go, girl. He mouthed off to me. He exists. He breathes my air, said the guy, and his jerk friends laughed meanly. God, what creeps. Armed creeps. One of them was holding a shotgun loosely in the crook of his arm. America, right to bear arms, yada yada yada. How old were these yahoos? Did their parents know they had guns? It gets so tiring, this strong picking on the weak stuff. It was the story of my life, literally. And it seemed to be a big part of the outside world, too. I was sick of it. Sick of guys like these, stupid and bullying. I stepped out from beside the building. The girl saw me, and her eyes flicked in surprise. It was enough. The guys wheeled to look behind them. Just another stupid girl, they thought, relieved. Their eyes lingered a moment on my scratched face, my black eye, but they didn't keep watching me. Mistake number one. So, Ella, what have you got to say for yourself? The lead guy taunted. Is there a reason I shouldn't teach you a lesson, too? Three guys against one girl? That seems about even, I said, striding up. It was hard to keep the fury off my face. My blood was singing with it. Shut up, chick, one of the boys snapped. You better get out of here if you know what's good for you. Can't, I said, walking to stand next to the girl named Ella. She looked at me in alarm. Actually, I think kicking your stupid butts would be good for me. They laughed. Mistake number two. Like the rest of the flock, I'm much stronger than even a grown man. Genetic engineering at work. And all of us had been trained in self-defense by Jeb. I had skills. Until yesterday, I'd never had to use them. If I could just get Ella out of here. Grab Big Mouth, said the head guy, and the other two moved to flank me, which made mistake number three. Bam, you're out. I moved fast, fast, fast. With no warning, I snapped a high kick right into the lead jerk's chest. A blow that would have only knocked Fang's breath away actually seemed to snap a rib on this guy. I heard the crack, and the guy choked, looking shocked, and fell backward. The remaining guys rushed me at once. I whirled and grabbed the shotgun out of one's hands. Holding its barrel, I swung it in a wide arc against the side of his head. Crack! Stunned, he staggered sideways as a bright red flow of blood streamed from his scalp. I glanced over and saw Ello still standing there, looking afraid. I hoped not of me. Run! I yelled at her. Get out of here! After a moment of hesitation, she turned and ran, leaving a little cloud of red dust behind her. The third grabbed my arm, and I yanked it loose, then swung and punched him, aiming for his chin but hitting his nose. I winced. Oops. Feeling his nose break, and there was a slow-motion pause of about a second before it started gushing blood. Jeez-um. Humans were like eggshells. The bully boys were a mess, but still, they staggered to their feet, rage and humiliation twisting their ugly faces. One of them picked up his gun and cocked it, favoring his right arm. You're gonna be sorry, he promised, spitting blood out of his mouth and starting toward me. Bet I won't, I said, and I turned tail and raced for the woods as fast as I could. Chapter 22. Of course, if I could have taken off, I'd have been a little speck in the sky by then. But I couldn't let those yo-yos see my wings, and within seconds I was in the woods anyway. I ran through the underbrush, smacking branches out of my way, glad I was wearing shoes. I had no idea where I was going. Behind me, I could hear a couple of the bozos yelling, swearing, threatening. I wanted to laugh, but couldn't spare the time. I was steadily increasing the distance between us. Then I heard a loud bang from the shotgun, and tree bark exploded around my head. That stupid gun. Are you thinking what I think you're thinking? Are you wondering if I noticed the similarities between this asinine situation and my dream? Well, yeah, I'm not an idiot. As to what it all meant, well, I'll work on that later. And the next second, there was another bang, and almost simultaneously a sudden, searing pain in my left shoulder. I gasped and glanced over to see blood blossoming on my sleeve. That idiot actually hit me! Then, sheer bad luck made me instantly trip over a tree root, fall on my hurt shoulder, and slide crazily down a steep slope through bushes, underbrush, vines, and rocks. I tried to grab anything, but my left arm couldn't move well, and my right hand scrabbled uselessly. Finally, I tumbled to a stop at the bottom of an overgrown ravine. Looking up, I only saw green. I was covered by vines and shrubs. I lay very still, trying to catch my breath, trying to think. Far above me, I heard the wild boys yelling and shooting again. They sounded like elephants crashing through the woods, and I tracked them clearly as they ran past where I fell. I felt like an ogre had just beaten me all over with a club. I could barely move my left arm, and it hurt like fire. I tried to stretch out my wing, only to suck my breath in hard as I found out it had been hit, too. I couldn't see it well over my shoulder, but my big clue was the screaming pain. I was scraped all over, had lost my windbreaker, and, if I wasn't mistaken, I was sitting in a patch of poison ivy. Slowly, I stood up, smothering gasps of pain. I had to get out of here. I checked the sun and started working my way north. I swallowed a groan as I realized that Nudge and Fang were no doubt wondering where the heck I was. I'd messed up big time. Angel was waiting for me too, if she was still alive. I had let them all down. On top of it, I was hurt pretty bad and had gun-toting maniacs after me. Crap. I scowled. It's in my nature to fight for the underdog. Jeb had always told me it was my fatal flaw. Jeb had been right. Chapter 23. Fang, I'm really hungry, you know? It had been almost an hour since Max had left them. Nudge still didn't understand exactly what had happened, where Max had gone. Fang nodded curtly, then motioned with his head. Nudge banked slightly and followed him. They were coming up on some cliffs, flat on top and made of striated rock. Fang headed toward a shadowy indentation, and Nudge started backpedaling to slow down for a landing. This close, the indentation turned into a broad, shallow cave, and Nudge ducked a bit as she sat down inside. Fang landed almost silently beside her. The cave went maybe 15 feet in and was about 20 feet wide, tapering at both ends. The floor was sandy and dry, and Nudge sat down thankfully. Fang took off his backpack and started handing her food.
Oh, yes, yes, Nudge said, ripping open a bag of dried fruit.
Fang waved a chocolate bar in front of her, and she squealed happily.
Oh, Fang, where did you find this? You must have been hiding it. You didn't say anything, and all this time you've had chocolate, and oh God, it's so good.
Fang gave her a little smile and sat down. He bit into his chocolate and closed his dark eyes for a few moments, chewing slowly.
So, where's Max? Nudge asked a few minutes later. Why'd she go down there? Shouldn't she be back by now? Aren't we supposed to go all the way to Lake Mead? What are we going to do if she doesn't come back soon?
She stopped when Fang held up his hand. Max saw someone in trouble, down below, and went to help. He said in his quiet, deliberate voice, "We'll wait here for her. Lake Mead is right below us." Nudge worried. Every second counted. So why were they stuck here? What was Max doing that was more important than Angel? She finished her last dried apricot and looked around. Okay, now that Fang mentioned it, she could see the blue edge of Lake Mead off to her left. Nudge stood up, her head barely touching the ceiling. Their cave had a fairly wide ledge on either side of it, and she walked out on the left ledge to see the lake better. She froze.
Fang?
Chapter 24. Fang came out next to Nudge, then stood perfectly still. The ledge curved upward toward the top of the cliff. Thin, scrubby plants dotted the area, and boulders stuck out of hard-packed clay and rock. In and among the rocks and plants were large nests, each about 2 feet across. Most of the nests had large, fuzzy fledglings in them, and most of the fledglings had larger, rust-colored parents, and most of the parents were staring tensely at Nudge and Fang with cold, predator's eyes.
What are they?
Nudge whispered out the side of her mouth.
Ferruginous hawks, Fang said softly. Largest raptor in the States. Sit down. Very slowly. No sudden movements, or we're both bird feed.
Okay,
Nudge thought, gradually sinking to her knees. She wanted to turn and run, but guessed if she did, she might be attacked. The few talons she could see looked lethal, not to mention the severe beaks, curved sharply and mean-looking.
Do you think,
she began softly, but Fang motioned for her to be quiet, very quiet. He lowered himself next to her, his eyes on the birds. One of the hawks had a partially dismembered gopher in its mouth.
Its fledglings were squawking loudly for it. After several minutes, Nudge felt like she needed to scream. She hated sitting still, had a million things to ask, didn't know how much longer she could take this in action. A small movement caught her eye. Fang was very slowly extending one of his wings. Every hawk head swiveled in unison, their eyes focusing on the wing like lasers.
"I'm letting them catch my scent."
Fang's lips barely moved. What felt like a year later, the hawks seemed to relax a bit. They were huge, with an almost 5-foot wingspan, and looked cold and powerful. On top, their wing feathers were mostly brown with russet streaks, and they were streaked with white below, not unlike Nudge's own wings, except hers were so much bigger, twice as big. Some hawks went back to feeding their noisy offspring, others left in search of food, still others returned with dinner.
Ew.
Nudge couldn't help whispering when one hawk brought back a still wriggling snake. The fledglings were excited to see it and practically climbed over one another trying to get the first bite.
Double ew.
Fang turned his head slowly and grinned at her. Nudge was so surprised that she smiled back. This was pretty cool. She was itchy to leave, wished Max would show up soon, and she wished they had more food. But all the same, it was pretty awesome to sit here in the sun, surrounded by huge, beautiful birds, her own wings stretched out and resting. She guessed it couldn't hurt to do this for a little bit longer. Chapter 25. But not that long. "Angel's waiting for us," Nudge said a bit later. "I mean, she's like a little sister, like everyone's little sister." She brushed some rock dust off her already dusty tan legs and scowled, picking at a scab on her knee. "At night, when we're supposed to be asleep, me and Angel talk and tell jokes and stuff." Her large brown eyes met Fang's. "I mean, am I going to have to sleep in that room alone whenever we get home? Max has to come back. She wouldn't let Angel go, right?"
"No," said Fang. "She won't let Angel go. Look, you see how that big hawk, the one with the dark stripe on its shoulders, you see how he seems to move one wing faster than the other when he banks? It makes his bank really tight and smooth. We should try it."
Nudge looked at him. That was probably the longest speech she'd ever heard Fang make. She turned to watch the hawk he'd pointed out.
"Yeah, I see what you mean."
But she'd barely finished before Fang had stood up, run lightly toward the edge of the cliff, and leaped off. His large, powerful, dark wings caught the air and swooped him up. Fang flew closer to where the other hawks were circling in a kind of hawk ballet. Nudge sighed. She really, really wished Max were here. Was Max hurt? Should they go back? She would ask Fang when he returned. Just then, he swept past her, level with their cave.
"Come on," he said. "Try it. You'll fly better."
Nudge sighed again and brushed some chocolate crumbs off her shirt. Wasn't he worried about Angel? If he was, he probably wouldn't show it, she guessed. But she knew Fang loved Angel. He'd read to her before she learned how to read, and even now he still held her when she was upset about something.
"Well, I might as well practice too. Better than sitting around doing nothing."
She flung herself off the cliff, unable to keep a bittersweet happiness from flooding her chest. It just felt so beautiful to float in the air, to move her wings strongly and feel herself glide freely through space. She flew alongside Fang, and he demonstrated the move for her. She watched him and imitated it. It worked great. She flew in huge circles, practicing the move and flying closer to the hawks, who seemed to be tolerating her. As long as she didn't think about Max or Angel, she would be okay. That evening, Nudge lay on her stomach, her wings flat around her, and watched the parent hawks grooming their young. They were so gentle, so attentive. These fierce, strong birds were carefully smoothing their fledglings' mottled white feathers, feeding them, helping them get out of the nest to practice flying. A lump came to her throat. She sniffled.
"What?"
said Fang. "These birds," said Nudge, wiping her eyes and feeling stupid. "Like, these dumb hawks have more of a mom than I ever had. The parents are taking care of the little ones. No one ever did that for me. Well, besides Max, but she's not a mom."
"Yeah, I get it."
Fang didn't look at her. His voice almost sounded sad. The sun set, and the hawks settled down in their nests. Finally, the raucous fledglings quieted. When it had been dark for an hour, Fang edged closer to Nudge and held out his left hand in a fist. Nudge looked up at him, then stacked her left fist on top of his.
It was something the flock always did together before bedtime. Except they hadn't done it when they'd fallen asleep in that cabin last night. And now it was just the two of them. Nudge tapped his fist with her right hand, and he tapped hers. "Night," she whispered, feeling as if everything she cared about had been ripped away from her. Silently, she curled up against the wall of the cave.
"Night, Nudge," whispered Fang.
Chapter 26.
Oh, man, this was not the best day I ever had. My shoulder was still bleeding a bit, even though I'd been pressing on it for hours. Every time I jostled it, warm blood oozed through my fingers. I hadn't run into the gun-carrying clowns again, but I'd heard them off and on. I'd been working my way north in a big arc, trying to weave a confusing trail for whoever might be following me. Every time I heard them, I froze for endless minutes, trying to blend in with the brush. Then, cramped and stiffening, I would painstakingly start again. In case they brought dogs, I'd splashed through streams at least 4 times, and let me tell you, trying to keep your balance on moss-covered rocks and icy water with the hurt shoulder is no picnic. I'd felt around on my shoulder and wing, and as far as I could tell, the shot had just scooped out a trail of flesh and wing, but hadn't actually lodged inside. Whatever. My arm and wing felt useless, and they hurt awfully. It was getting late. Angel was somewhere hours away, being subjected to God knows what horror, wondering where I was. I pressed my lips together, trying not to cry. I couldn't fly, couldn't catch up to Fang and Nudge, who were probably furious by now. It wasn't like I could call their cell phones or anything. This situation totally sucked, and it was 100% my own stupid fault, which made it suck even worse. Then, of course, it started pouring rain. So now I was slogging my way through wet woods, wet brush, red clay mud, wiping water out of my eyes, getting more chilled and more miserable and more hungry and more insanely furious at myself. I hadn't heard the guys in a long time. They'd probably gone home to get out of the rain. A minute later, I blinked and wiped my eyes. I squinted. There were lights ahead. If it was a store or shed, I could wait till everyone left and then hole up for the night. Soon I was only 10 yards away, hunching down in the darkness, peering through the wet trees. It was a house. A figure passed a window and my eyebrows raised. It was that girl, Ella. This must be her house. I bit my lip. She probably lived here with her 2 doting parents and her 1.6 siblings. How nice for her. Anyway, I was glad she had gotten home safe. Despite everything, if I had let those horrible guys beat her up, I would never have forgiven myself. I shivered hard, feeling the icy rain run down my back. I was about to fall over. What to do here? Get a plan. I was still waiting for a brilliant inspiration when the side door of the house opened. Ella came out holding a huge umbrella. A shadow moved at her feet. It was a dog, a low-to-the-ground, fat dog. "Come on, Magnolia," Ella called. "Make it fast. You don't want to get too wet." The dog started sniffing around the edge of their yard, snuffling in the weeds, oblivious to the rain. Ella turned and walked up and down, twirling her umbrella, scanning her yard. Her back was to me. "Desperate times call for desperate measures." I don't know who first said that, but they were right on the money. I took a deep breath, then very, very quietly began to move toward Ella. Chapter 27. "Okay, 2 more blood samples and the glucose assay will be done. Then we can do the EEGs."
"Why isn't this over? Where are you, Max?" Angel thought sadly as the white coat approached.
The front of Angel's dog crate opened, and a guy knelt down and peered in at her. She pressed herself against the back as hard as she could. He reached in to grab her hand where the shunt was and noticed her face. He turned back to his fellow white coats.
"What happened to it?"
"It bit Riley earlier," someone said. "He hit it." Angel tried to pull herself into a tight little ball. The whole left side of her face throbbed, but she was glad she'd bitten him. She hated him, hated all of them.
"Stupid Riley. Guy should work in a car wash. If he wrecks the specimen, I'll kill him."
"Doesn't he realize how unique this subject is?" the white coat said angrily. "I mean, this is subject 11. Doesn't he know how long we've been looking for it? You tell Riley not to damage the merchandise."
He reached in and tried to take Angel's hand again.
Angel didn't know what she should do. The plastic shunt on the back of her hand hurt, and she'd cradled it against her chest. All day, she'd had nothing to eat or drink,
and then they made her drink some horrible, sticky, sweet orange stuff. They'd taken blood from her arm, but she'd fought them and bit that one guy. So they'd put a shunt in the back of her hand to make taking blood easier. They'd drawn her blood 3 times already. Angel felt near tears but clenched her jaw. Slowly, she uncoiled herself a tiny bit and edged closer to the opening. She stretched her hand toward the lab guy.
"That's it," he said soothingly, and pulled out a needle with a test tube attached.
He unclipped the stop on the shunt and pushed the needle in.
"This won't hurt. Honest."
Angel turned away, keeping her back to him, that one hand stretched away from her. It didn't take long, and it didn't hurt. Maybe he was a good white coat, like Jeb. And maybe the moon was made out of cream cheese.
Chapter 28.
"Okay," said Iggy. "We're being very careful. Hello? Gazzy? We're being very careful?"
"Check," said the gas man, patting the explosive package they called Big Boy.
"Nails?"
The gas man rattled the jar.
"Check."
"Tarp. Cooking oil."
"Check. Check."
The gas man nodded.
"We are geniuses. Those erasers will never know what hit them. If only we had time to dig a pit."
"Yeah, and put poison stakes at the bottom," Iggy agreed. "But I think what we've got is good. Now we need to fly out, stay out of sight, and check on how the roads run and whether the erasers have made camp anywhere."
"Okay, then we can seed the roads with the nails and set up the tarp and oil," the gas man grinned. "We just have to make sure not to get caught."
"Yes, that would be bad," Iggy said with a straight face. "Now, is it night yet?"
"Pretty much. I found you some dark clothes." The gas man pressed a shirt and pants into Iggy's hands.
"And I've got some, too. So, you ready to roll?"
He hoped Iggy couldn't hear how nervous he was. This was a great plan. They had to do it. But failure would be disastrous. And probably deadly.
"Yeah. I'm bringing Big Boy in case an opportunity arises."
Iggy changed his clothes, then put their homemade bomb into a backpack and slung it onto his shoulders.
"Don't worry," he said, as if he could see the gas man's expression. "It can't go off until I set the timer. It's like a safety bomb."
The gas man tried to smile. He cranked open the hall window as wide as it would go and perched on the ledge. His palms were sweating, and his stomach was all fluttery. But he had no choice. This was for Angel. This was to show people what would happen if they messed with his family. He swallowed hard and launched himself into the night air. It was amazing to be able to spread his wings and fly. It was great. As he felt the night wind against his face, the gas man's spirits rose. He felt strong, powerful, and dangerous. Not at all like an 8-year-old mutant freak.
Chapter 29.
Ella? The girl stiffened and jumped back. I stepped forward a bit, out of the underbrush, so she could see my face.
"It's me," I said, feeling even stupider. "The girl from before?"
It was dark and still raining, and I hoped she could recognize me. The dog trotted over, saw me, and gave a half-hearted woof of warning.
"Oh, yeah. Hey, thanks for helping me," said Ella, squinting at me through the rain. "Are you okay? What are you doing?"
She sounded wary and glanced around, like maybe in the time since she'd last seen me, I'd gone over to the side of evil.
"I'm okay," I said lamely. "Well, actually, I guess I need help."
Those words had never left my lips before.
Thank God Jeb wasn't here to see me doing something so incredibly boneheaded and weak.
"Oh," said Ella. "Gosh, okay. Did those guys..."
"One of them managed to clip me with some shot, if you can believe that," I said, inching closer.
Ella gasped and put her hand over her mouth.
"Oh, no. Why didn't you tell me? You're hurt. Why didn't you go to the hospital? Oh, my gosh, come on in."
She stepped back to give me room and urged Magnolia, who had lumbered over and started sniffing my wet clothes with interest, away from me. Guess what? I hesitated. Here was the moment of decision. Until I stepped into that house, I could still turn and run, escape. Once I was in that house, it would be much harder. Call it a little quirk of my personality, but I tend to freak out if I feel trapped anywhere. We all do. The flock, I mean. Living in a cage during your formative years can do that. But I was honest enough with myself to know that I really couldn't go on like this. Wet, cold,
Starving, and a little wonky from loss of blood. I had to suck it up and accept help. From strangers. Are your parents home? I asked.
There's just my mom, said Ella. No dad.
Come on, let's get you inside. My mom can help.
Magnolia, here, girl.
Ella turned and strode toward the house. She clomped up wooden steps, then turned and looked for me.
Can you walk okay?
Uh-huh. Slowly, I headed toward Ella's small house, which was glowing with warmth and light. I felt lightheaded and panicky. This could be the last huge mistake in a long line of huge mistakes I had already made today. I cradled my hurt arm with my good one.
Oh my God, is that blood?
Ella said, staring at my pale blue sweatshirt.
Oh no, come on, we have to get you inside quick.
She shoved the door open with her shoulder, almost tripping on Magnolia, who trotted in quickly.
Mom! Mom, this girl needs help!
I felt frozen. Stay or run. Stay or run. Stay? Chapter 30.
You think that wire will hold?
The gas man whispered. Iggy nodded, frowning as he twisted the two cable ends together with pliers. He leaned against a pine tree for leverage, and when the wire was tight, he snapped on a cable clamp and pinched it shut.
That'll hold a bit, he whispered back, until a certain Hummer hits it at top speed.
The gas man nodded grimly. What a night. They had gotten so much done. Max couldn't have done better herself. He hoped Max had already rescued Angel by now. He hoped nothing had gone wrong. If the white coats had gotten hold of Angel, for just an instant he saw her, white and lifeless, laid on a cold steel slab while white coats lectured about her unusual bone structure. He swallowed and shook the dreadful image off. Once more, he glanced around, listening.
Back home? Iggy whispered.
Yeah. Standing up, the gas man pushed off from the ground, staying close to the trees. He followed Iggy's dark shadow as he braked and headed back west toward home. From up here, the gas man couldn't see any of their handiwork, which was a good thing. They didn't want the eraser's chopper to be able to pick out the tarp or the tripwire until it was too late.
We've covered the ways in and out, he said to Iggy once they were cruising at height. Oil slick, nails in the road, tripwire. That should do it.
Iggy nodded.
I'm bummed we couldn't use Big Boy, he said, but I don't want to waste it. We have to actually see them first. I mean, you do.
Maybe tomorrow, the gas man said encouragingly. We'll go out and see what havoc we've wreaked.
Rot, said Iggy.
Whatever, said the gas man, breathing deeply in the cold night air.
Wait till Max found out how cool they had been.
Chapter 31. A dark-haired woman with worried eyes opened the door wider.
What is it, Ella? What's wrong?
Mom, this is... Ella stopped, her hand in midair.
Max, I said.
Why didn't I give a fake name?
Because I didn't think of it.
My friend Max. She's the girl I told you about, the one who saved me from Jose and Dwayne and them. She saved me. But they shot her.
Oh, no, exclaimed Ella's mother. Please, Max, come in. Do you want me to call your parents?
I stood on the doormat, reluctant to drip rain and blood on their floor. Then Ella's mom saw my blood-stained sweatshirt, and her eyes flew to my face. My cheek was scratched. When I was black, the whole situation changed in that instant.
Let me get my stuff, she said gently. Take off your shoes and go with Ella to the bathroom.
I sloshed down the hallway in my wet socks.
What stuff is she going to get? I whispered.
Ella turned on a light and ushered me into an old-fashioned bathroom with green tiles and a rust ring around the sink drain.
Her doctor's stuff, she whispered back. She's a vet, so she's good with injuries, even on people.
A vet! I started laughing weakly and had to sit down on the edge of the tub. A vet. Wait till they found out how appropriate that was.
Ella's mom came in with a plastic box of first aid supplies. Ella, maybe you should get Max some juice or something. She probably needs some sugar and fluids.
Juice would be great, I said with feeling.
Ella nodded and hurried down the hall.
I take it you don't want me to call your parents?
Ella's mom said softly, starting to cut away the neck of my sweatshirt.
No. Hello, lab. May I speak to a test tube, please?
Or the police either, right?
No need to get them involved, I agreed.
Then I sucked in my breath as her gentle fingers found the wound on my upper arm.
I think the bullet only grazed me.
Yes, I think you're right. But it's pretty deep and messy. And over here, I sat frozen, staring straight ahead.
as all my senses tensed. I was taking a huge risk here. You have no idea how huge. I had never, ever let someone outside the flock see my wings. But this was one situation I couldn't fix by myself. I hated that. Ella's mom frowned slightly. She finished cutting the neck and then stretched the shirt off, leaving me in my tank top. I sat there like a statue, feeling a chilled coldness inside that had nothing to do with being wet. Here, Ella handed me a big glass of orange juice. I practically choked, trying to drink it down as fast as possible. Oh my God, it was so good. What's, Ella's mom said, her fingers skimming along the edge of my wing, where it folded and tucked into an indentation next to my spine between my shoulder and my waist. She leaned over to see better. I stared at my wet socks, my toes clenching. She turned me slightly, and I let her. Max. Her dark brown eyes were concerned, tired, and upset all at once. Max, what is this? She asked gently. Touching the feathers that were just barely visible, I swallowed hard, knowing I had just lost any hope for a normal connection with Ella and her mom. In my mind, I reviewed the house layout, a right down the hall, a quick left, and through the front door. It would take only a few seconds. I could do it. I could probably grab my boots on the way out, too. It's a wing, I whispered. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Ella frown. My, wing. Silence. It got hurt, too. I took a deep breath, feeling like I was going to hurl. Then slowly and painfully extended my wing just a bit so Ella's mom could see where I had been shot. Their eyes widened and widened and widened until I began to expect them to just pop out and land on the floor. What? Ella began wonderingly. Her mom leaned over and examined it more closely. Amazingly, she was trying to act casual, like, oh, okay, you have a wing. No biggie. I was practically hyperventilating, feeling lightheaded and kind of tunnel vision-y. Yeah, your wing got hit too, Ella's mom murmured, extending it ever so gently. I think the shot nicked a bit of bone. She sat back and looked at me. I stared at the floor, feeling the weight of her gaze. I could not believe I was in this situation. Fang was going to kill me. And after I was dead, he would kill me again. And I deserved it. Ella's mom took a deep breath and let it out. Okay, Max, she said in a calm, controlled voice. First, we have to clean the wounds and stop the bleeding. When was the last time you had a tetanus shot? I stared up into her eyes. Ella's mom seemed no-nonsense and incredibly caring about me. I had become a huge crybaby in the last couple days, so I wasn't surprised to feel tears haze my vision. Never? Okay, I can take care of that too. Chapter 32.
Come on,
the gas man breathed. He was holding on to the pine branch so hard that he could barely feel his fingers anymore. What's happening? Iggy demanded impatiently. Tell me everything. It was early morning, and the two of them were perched near the top of an old-growth pine overlooking one of the abandoned logging roads. They had cased the situation, and the gas man had been right. At least two erasers, maybe more, had set up a rough camp not far from where the helicopter had landed. It seemed clear they were looking for the rest of the flock. It didn't matter whether they wanted to kill them or only kidnap them. Capture was unthinkable. The gas man still had nightmares in which he found himself back at the school. He dreamed that white coats took blood, injected him with various drugs to see how he reacted, made him run and jump and then swallow radioactive dye so they could study his circulation. Days and endless weeks and years of feeling sick, hurting, vomiting, being exhausted, being stuck in a cage. The gas man would die before he went back there. Angel would rather have died too, he knew, but she hadn't had a choice.
The Hummer's coming,
the gas man said under his breath. On the right road?
Uh-huh.
And they're driving too fast. The gas man gave a tight, worried smile. They're not practicing safe driving habits. Tisk, what a shame.
Okay, they're coming up, the gas man muttered. Another quarter mile.
Can you see the tarp?
No.
The gas man watched tensely as the muddied black Humvee sped down the unpaved logging road.
Any second now, he whispered to Iggy, who was practically vibrating with excitement.
Hope they're wearing their seatbelts. Not, Then it happened. It was like watching a movie. One second, the boxy black vehicle was tearing along the road, and the next second, it swerved violently to the left with an audible squealing of brakes. It began a slow, graceless series of jerky spins down the road, then gave an unexpected jump toward the trees on one side. It hit the trees at an angle and went airborne, sailing upside down about 15 feet before landing with a heavy crunching sound.
"Whoa," the gas man said softly. "That was incredible."
"You have 2 seconds to give me the picture," Iggy said irritably.
"It hit the oil, all right. It spun, hit the trees, and did a flip," the gas man told him. "Now it's on its back, like a big, ugly, dead beetle."
"Yes!" Iggy punched the air, making their branch sway. "Signs of life?"
Yeah. One of them just punched out a window. Now they're climbing out. They look pretty dang mad. They're walking, so they're not that hurt."
The gas man wanted the erasers out of the picture, so he wouldn't have to worry about them anymore. At the same time, he wasn't sure how he would feel if they had actually died. Then he remembered that they had taken Angel. He decided he was probably okay with them suffering a life-threatening accident.
"Shoot," Iggy sounded disappointed. "Any point in dropping Big Boy on them now?"
The gas man shook his head, remembered Iggy couldn't see it, and said,
"I don't think so. They're talking on walkie-talkies. Now they're heading straight into the woods. We probably cause a huge forest fire or something."
Iggy frowned. "Okay, we need to regroup. Come up with phase 2. How about we hang at the old cabin for a minute?"
"Cool," said the gas man. "Let's go. We've done enough good for one day."
Chapter 33. 80 years ago, loggers had used a makeshift cabin nearby as a base during logging season. Abandoned for the last 30 years, it was practically in ruins, which made it an especially good clubhouse for the flock. "So, phase 1 is complete," said Iggy, sitting in a broken plastic lawn chair. He sniffed the air. "We haven't been here in ages."
"Uh-huh," said the gas man, glancing around. "In case you're wondering, it's still a dump."
"It's always been a dump," Iggy said. "That's why we like it."
"Man, I can't get over it. That tarp full of oil so totally wiped the Hummer out," Gasman said. "It was kind of scary to really do it."
Iggy opened the backpack and took out Big Boy, running his sensitive fingers over the clock, duct-taped to the explosive package.
"We have to eliminate the erasers," he muttered, "so they can't ever hurt us again."
"So they can't ever take Angel again," the Gasman said, his eyes narrowing. "I say we bomb the chopper."
Iggy nodded and stood up.
"Yeah. Listen, let's get out of here. Get back home, make more plans." In the next instant, the faintest vibration of the floorboards made Iggy freeze. The gas man quickly looked at him, saw Iggy's sightless eyes flick to and fro.
"Did you hear?" the gas man whispered, and Iggy nodded, holding up his hand. "Maybe a raccoon."
"Not in the daytime," Iggy barely mouthed back.
A slight scratching on the door made the gas man's blood turn to ice in his veins. Surely it was just an animal, a squirrel or something.
"Little pigs, little pigs, let me come in."
The whispered voice, serene and angelic, seemed to float through the cracks in the door like poisonous smoke. It was an eraser's voice, a voice that could ask you to jump off a cliff and you'd do it. Heart pounding, the gas man quickly scanned the room. The door, 2 windows, one in the main room, and a tiny one in the bathroom. He doubted he could fit through the one in the bathroom, much less Iggy. The eraser scratched at the door again, and the hairs on the back of the gas man's neck stood up. "Okay, the window in here then." He began to edge his way over to it, knowing that Iggy would be able to follow the almost imperceptible sound. Crash! The door burst open, splintered wood flying through the air like darts. 8 o'clock. The gas man whispered, telling Iggy where the window was as his brain registered the hulking eraser filling the doorway. His muscles tensed for the leap through the window, but its light was suddenly blocked by a huge, grinning head.
"Hey, piggy, piggy, piggy,"
a second eraser taunted through the dirt-clouded glass. Years of max-enforced training kicked in as adrenaline sped through the gas man's body. Door blocked, window blocked. They were surrounded, with no clean escape available. It was going to be a fight, he realized, already preparing himself. More than likely, a fight to the death. Chapter 34. Nudge woke up 4 times before she finally rolled over and pried her eyes open. It was barely dawn. Fang was gone. First Angel, then Max, now Fang. Gone! Nudge looked around, crawling to the opening of the cave on her hands and knees. There was nothing like panic to really wake you up, get all your senses going. Nudge felt keenly alert, frightened, too many thoughts starting to rush in her brain. Movement caught her eye, and her head swiveled in line with the loose formation of hawks wheeling through the crisp, white-blue sky. They were so beautiful, powerful, graceful, completely one with the sky and the earth and the rough cliffs. One of them was Fang. Nudge stood quickly, almost bumping her head on the low ceiling of the cave. Without hesitation, she leaped off the cliff edge out into the sky. Her wings unfolded and caught the wind like sails, and suddenly she was a small brown boat soaring across an endless blue sea. She approached the hawks, and after hard, glinting glances at her, they moved so she could join them. Fang was watching her, and Nudge was surprised by his face, how alive he looked, how untight. Fang always looked very tight somehow, taut, like the string on a bow. Now he looked loose and free and alive.
Morning, he said.
I'm hungry, said Nudge.
He nodded. Town about 3 minutes away. Follow me.
He tilted his body in a new way that led him up and away without moving his wings. It was cool, like a plane. Nudge tried it, but it didn't work as well for her. She would practice. Below them was a thin 2-lane highway, clotted with a few last shops and businesses before the road wound away into the desert. Fang dipped his head. A fast food place had a large dumpster out back. Even from up this high, Nudge could see a worker tossing cardboard boxes of stuff into it, getting ready for a new day. They circled a couple times, till they were sure the worker wasn't coming out again, then dropped quickly, like bombs, tucking their wings in tight with just the feather tips guiding their descent. 30 feet above the dumpster, they blew their wings out again, breaking sharply. Then they landed, almost silently, on the metal edge of the dumpster.
Nirvana, Fang said, pawing through food that was still good but not sellable. Burger?
Nudge thought, then shook her head. I don't know. After watching the hawks shredding little animals, oh, but look, here's a couple of salads and some apple pies. Bonus! They tightened the drawstrings of their windbreakers around their waists. Then, working fast, they started stuffing food inside their jackets, anything that would travel. 3 minutes after they'd landed, they were airborne again, lumpy and smiling. It was amazing how much better Nudge felt after eating. She sighed and sat cross-legged in the cave entrance, watching the hawks fly. Fang finished his 5th thin hamburger patty and wiped his fingers on his jeans.
You know, I think the way they swoop and stuff is like a message to the other hawks, he said. Like they're telling them where there's game or where they'll be or something. I haven't figured it out yet, but I will.
Oh. Nudge sat back on her heels and spread her wings out, enjoying the feel of the sun warming her feathers. She tried to be quiet and not disturb Fang, but after 5 minutes, she was close to meltdown. Fang, you just got to go find Max, she said. Or should we go on and try to find Angel? Fang pulled his attention away from the hawks with difficulty.
We're going to circle back. Look for Max, he said. She must have run into something.
Nudge nodded solemnly, unable to define what kind of something would have kept Max from them. She didn't want to think about it. Fang stood, tall and dark against the weathered sandstone of the rock cliff. He looked down at her, his face calm and patient, his eyes reflecting no light whatsoever.
You ready?
Nudge jumped to her feet, brushing sand off her butt.
Absolutely. Where do you think we should...
But Fang was already gone, snatched away by the wind, borne upward by air rising from the canyon below. Nudge took a small running leap off the cliff after him.
Tarzan!
She yelled.
Whatever that was supposed to mean.
Chapter 35. I woke up warm, dry, bandaged, and safe.
I felt like death.
As always, as soon as I was conscious, I panicked for a second, not knowing where I was.
My brain anxiously registered flowered wallpaper, a soft, warm bed that smelled like laundry softener. I looked down. I was wearing a huge t-shirt that had a cartoon character on it, one I didn't know. I was at Ella's house. I was supposed to be rescuing Angel, if she was even still alive. Fang and Nudge were probably sticking pins in a Max doll by now. I didn't blame them. Now that I was awake, the pain in my shoulder and wing hit me all over again. A stinging ache that radiated out like a starburst. Ugh. I remembered once I dislocated my shoulder sparring with Fang. It had hurt so bad, and I had staggered around, clutching my shoulder and trying not to cry. Jeb had calmed me down, talking to me, taking my mind off it, and then, when I least expected it, he popped it right back into place. Instantly, all the pain was gone. He'd smiled and stroked my sweaty hair off my forehead and gotten me some lemonade. And I'd thought, this is what a dad would do. This is better than what a dad would do. I still missed Jeb so much it made my throat close. Suddenly, I froze because my bedroom door was opening very, very slowly and quietly. Run! My mind screamed as my hands curled into claws against the sheets. Fly! Ella's brown eyes, curious and eager, peered around the door. She spoke softly over her shoulder. I think she's awake. Ella's mom appeared. Morning, Max. You hungry? Do you like pancakes? And little breakfast sausages? Ella added. And fruit and stuff? I hoped it only felt like I was drooling on my nightshirt. I nodded. They smiled and left, and then I saw the clothes on my bed. My own jeans and socks had been washed, and there was a lavender sweatshirt with large slits cut newly into the back. Ella's mom was taking care of me, like Jeb had. I didn't know how to act, what to say. A girl could get used to this. Chapter 36. No matter how quickly the erasers killed him, the gas man was sure it would feel like forever. Up and away, Iggy breathed, inching slightly closer to him. Up and away? The gas man frowned. Iggy had to be kidding. Straight up? Crash! The gas man jumped as the window behind him shattered with a shower of glass and broken wood. An eraser pushed through the ragged opening with a silent grin. Guess what? The first eraser asked with a pleasant smile. We got the little one. They don't need you two alive. They laughed, the sound like deep bells ringing, and then their faces began to change. The gas man couldn't help grimacing as they morphed, becoming more wolf-like. Their muzzles extending, their teeth protruding until it looked like they had a mouthful of knives. Boys, boys, one almost purred. Didn't anyone ever tell you? You can run, but you can't hide. His shiny dark hair was becoming thicker, and more hair sprouted grotesquely on his arms and hands. He literally licked his chops and rubbed his huge, hairy hands together as if he'd learned how to be a bad guy from cartoons. Ready? Iggy's voice was so faint, his lips so still, that the gas man wasn't sure he'd heard anything. Every second seemed oddly stretched out, his hands closed into fists by his sides. He was ready. Sure. This freak's blind, one eraser said, gesturing toward Iggy. Don't worry, kid. It'll all be over soon, and you won't have to worry about being blind anymore. But it's a shame they didn't give you one of their new eyes, like mine. The gas man looked up at him, and a feeling of revulsion rose in his throat as he saw what the eraser meant. Set deep into one orbital socket was a stainless steel ball. A red, laser-like glow made it look as though it was filled with blood. The eraser grinned and turned his eye to the gas man. A red dot appeared on the gas man's shirt, and, as he watched, it slowly began to burn a small hole in the fabric. The erasers laughed. You left before they could fix you up with the latest technology, one said. Your loss. Yeah, right, the gas man thought in disgust. How about it, piggies? The first eraser asked. Do you want to try and run? Who knows? You might get lucky for a little while. Grinning with anticipation, the eraser drew closer. On three. Once again, the gas man wasn't sure if he'd heard Iggy or if he was imagining it. One, the gas man's toes clenched inside his sneakers. Two. When Iggy shouted, three,
The gas man leaped straight into the air, unfurled his wings with a huge whoosh. With a roar of anger, one eraser grabbed the gas man's foot and yanked. Above him, Iggy burst through the rotting roof of the cabin, out into the sky. The gas man broke free of the eraser's grip. Then he was pushing through the shattered roof, tucking his wings in tight to get through the hole. Outside, he lost altitude too fast and landed clumsily on a rickety roof beam. He slid sideways, grabbing roof shingles that came off in his hands. Iggy yelled from 20 feet above him, "Gasser, move!" Just as he slid over the edge of the roof, the gas man spread his wings. He pushed down hard with all his strength, then pulled his wings up and pushed them down again. As he surged up to meet Iggy, Iggy threw a package down into the cabin. "Move, move, move!" Iggy yelled, flapping like crazy. Within seconds, they were 100 yards away. Boom! Only, it was more like, buh, buh, boom! The two boys recoiled from the blast, tumbling backward in the air from the shockwave. The gas man righted himself, eyes wide, as a fireball 10 yards in diameter rose from where the cabin had been. He was speechless. After the fireball from Big Boy disintegrated, the cabin burned brightly, its old, rotted wood consumed as instantly as kindling. Flames reached for the sky, licking at the green trees nearby, sneaking along the ground as brittle brown pine needles caught fire. God, it was beautiful. "Well," Iggy said after a long while, "that takes care of them." The gas man nodded, feeling sick. One dark body had flown upward in the blast, falling back to earth as a glowing coal. The other eraser had crawled a few feet away from the cabin, a burning silhouette that had collapsed, its outlines blurred by flame. "Unless they escaped," Iggy added. Of course, Iggy hadn't seen anything. The gas man cleared his throat. "No," he said. "They're dead." He felt slightly queasy, guilty, and dirty. Then he remembered Angel, how she'd shared the last of the ice cream with him 3 nights ago. She was so small, and God only knew what horrible things they were doing to her. His jaw hardened. "Take that," he muttered. "That was for my sister, for Angel, you scum-sucking jerks." Then he saw the black Hummer, its hood crumpled, driving fast toward the burning cabin. An eraser was leaning out the passenger window, looking through binoculars. "Come on, Iggy," said the gas man. "Let's get out of here." Chapter 37. The bell clanged jarringly, and rough hands pushed Angel forward. She stumbled, catching herself at the last second before falling onto coils of razor wire. Angel wanted to cry. She'd been doing this all day. It was late afternoon by now. She was starving and lightheaded, and every muscle ached, and still they made her run. It was a maze. Angel knew that. They had made it in a huge gym-like room in the school's main building. They rang a bell and pushed her forward, and then she had to run as fast as she could to find the exit. Each time, the maze was different, the exit in a different place. If she slowed down, she got an electric shock so strong it scrambled her brain, or red-hot wires under her feet burned her. So, eyes blurry with tears, Angel ran forward blindly, taking this turn and that, until she finally stumbled out the exit. Then she would get a sip of water and a 5-minute rest while they redid the maze. Angel sniffled, trying to keep quiet. She hated this. If only she knew beforehand. If only she knew. She could run through fast and not get shocked or burned. Angel sat up, a tingle of excitement running down her spine. She closed her eyes and tried to listen to what the white coats were thinking. One of them wanted to let an eraser loose in the maze, have it fight with her, see how strong she really was. One of them thought they should increase the heated wires, so she always had to run on them, whether she was slowing down or not. Then he could study the effect of stress on her adrenaline levels. Angel wanted them to all burn in HE double toothpicks forever. One of them was designing the next maze, the creep. Angel concentrated, trying to look as though she was resting. Someone gave her another sip of water, and she sucked it down fast. She could see the rough plan of the maze. It was in her mind because it was in the white coat's mind. Deliberately, Angel breathed in and out, looking spent. But she felt a new surge of possibility. She got it. She knew what the next maze would look like. Blinking tiredly, Angel sat up, keeping her eyes unfocused. In her mind, she was reviewing the maze's layout. A quick right, then another right, then a left, skip the next three rights and take the fourth one, and so on, till she saw the exit. She could see all the traps, the dead ends, the paths that led nowhere. She could hardly wait to blow their minds. This would be fun. A white coat grabbed her, made her stand in front of the new maze's entrance. The bell clanged. Someone pushed her. Angel took off, running as fast as she could in case all the wires were hot. She took a quick right, another right, then a left, and so on. She raced through with record speed with no hesitation. She didn't get shocked once and never felt a hot wire under her feet. She burst out of the maze's exit, then collapsed onto the cool wooden floor. Time passed. Words floated to her. Amazing. Cognitive ability. Interpretive skills. Creative problem solving. Dissect her brain. Preserve her organs. Extract her DNA. A voice said,
No, we can't dissect her brain just yet.
The speaker laughed, as if it were funny. His voice sounded like she'd heard it in a fairy tale or something, like at night, or at home, or with Max. Angel blinked and swam toward consciousness. She made the mistake of looking up. An older man was there. He wore wire-rimmed glasses and was smiling at her. She got no thoughts from him whatsoever. He looked.
Hello, Angel,
said Jeb Batchelder kindly. I haven't seen you in a long time.
I missed you, kiddo.
Chapter 38. Nudge didn't know exactly what Fang expected to see. Max flying toward them, Max standing on the ground below waving her arms to get their attention. Max's body crumpled. Nudge shut that thought down. She would just wait. Fang was older and really smart. Max trusted him. Nudge trusted him too. How far back had Max separated from them? Nudge couldn't remember. She and Fang had been flying in ever-widening circles for hours. How did they know Max hadn't passed them somehow and was waiting for them back at Lake Mead? Fang, do you remember where we left Max?
Yes.
Are we going to go there?
Pause. Not if we can help it.
But why? Maybe Max is hurt and needs help. Maybe we need to save her before we go save Angel. It was hard, keeping these missions separate. First Angel, now Max, then Angel again. Fang banked to the left, tightening the angle as they'd seen the hawks do. Nudge followed him. Below them, the ground looked parched, with only occasional roads, cactuses, brush.
I don't think Max would have gotten hurt all by herself, Fang said slowly. She's not going to fly into a tree or crash land. If she's late because she's hurt, it probably means that someone, a person, hurt her, which means that someone knows about her. We don't want that someone to know about us, too, which they would if we went to where Max is.
Nudge's jaw dropped.
And if Max is late because she's busy, then our going to her won't speed things up. She'll come when she's good and ready. So for now, we do a general look-see, but we're not going all the way back.
Nudge heard Max's voice in her head. Think before you speak. So she shut her mouth and thought. She had no idea how Fang could not get Max, even if it meant they might get captured or hurt themselves. They all might get captured or hurt saving Angel, right? Why was Max different from Angel? Max was more important than Angel, Nudge thought, feeling guilty. Max took care of them, helped run their whole lives. She snuck a look at Fang. Fang was good, if not very warm or huggy. He was strong and handsome and capable. But would he stick around to take care of everyone if there were no Max? Or would he take off and go live by himself somewhere and not be bothered with them? Nudge didn't know what Fang was really thinking. Suddenly, Nudge was brushing tears out of her eyes, swallowing down the lump in her throat, feeling her nose clog up. Oh, God. She couldn't bear it without Max. Blinking, she tried to clear her vision, tried to think about something else. She saw a white truck down below and focused on it, forcing herself to wonder what it was carrying, where it was coming from, like any of it mattered. She drew in deep breaths and held them, refusing to cry in front of Fang. She might have to start being very strong very soon. She might as well practice now. The truck headed toward an intersection that had signs marking a junction. Nudge blinked and looked as the signs became clear and she could read them. One said, California Welcome Center, 18 miles. One said, Las Vegas, North, 98 miles. One said, Topisco, 3 miles.
Topisco? Topisco, Arizona, where Nudge was from, where her parents had been. Oh, God, could she still find her parents? Would they want her back? Had they missed her so much all these years?
Fang, she shouted, already beginning the descent. It's Topisco, down below. I'm going there.
No way, Nudge, Fang said, flying closer to her. Don't get sidetracked now. Stay with me.
No, said Nudge, feeling daring and desperate and brave. She hunched her shoulders and tucked her head down, feeling herself lose altitude.
I have to go find my parents. If Max is gone, I'm going to need someone.
Fang's dark eyes widened in surprise.
What? Nudge, you're crazy. Come on. Let's talk about it. Let's find a place. Take a break.
No, said Nudge, tears coming to her eyes again. I'm going down, and you can't stop me.
Chapter 39.
We're pretty safe, unless the erasers catch our scent, the gas man whispered to Iggy.
The two of them were tucked inside a narrow fissure in the side of a cliff, up high. Scraggly bushes obscured the opening. The erasers would have to rock climb to get them, or use the chopper. Iggy kicked back and rested his hands on his knees.
Well, this is a total suckfest, he said grumpily. I thought with those two erasers taking dirt naps, we'd be free and clear, at least for a while. They must have sent for backup even before they attacked the cabin.
The gas man ground dust between his fingertips.
At least we took two of them out.
He wondered if Iggy felt as weird and bad about it as he did. He couldn't tell.
Yeah, but what now? We're kinda all dressed up with no place to go, Iggy said. There's no way we can go home. They're probably everywhere. What are we supposed to do with ourselves? And what if Max and the others come back just to fly into an ambush?
I don't know, the gas man said in frustration. I hadn't thought beyond just blowing them the heck up. Maybe you should come up with a plan.
The two boys sat in the semi-darkness of the fissure, breathing the stale air. The gas man's stomach rumbled.
Tell me about it, Iggy said, resting his head on his knees.
Okay, the gas man said suddenly. I have an idea. It's risky, and Max will kill us when she finds out.
Iggy raised his head.
Sounds like my kind of idea.
Chapter 40.
Never in my 14 long years have I felt the slightest bit normal,
except for my day with Ella and her mom, Dr. Martinez. First, we ate a real breakfast together around the kitchen table, on plates, with forks and knives and napkins, instead of, like, a hot dog stuck on a barbecue fork, burned black over an open flame, then eaten right off the fork. Or cereal with no milk, or peanut butter off a knife, beanie weenies from a can. Then Ella had to go to school. I was worried about the jerks from before, but she said her teacher was good at keeping kids in line, and so was the school bus driver.
A real school bus, like on TV shows.
So it was me and Dr. Martinez. So, Max, she said as she unloaded the dishwasher. I tensed.
Do you want to talk about anything?
I looked at her. Her face was tan and kind, her eyes warm and understanding. But I knew if I started talking, I would never stop. I would break down and start crying. I would freak out. Then I wouldn't be Max anymore. Wouldn't be able to function, take care of the others, be the alpha girl, to save Angel. If it wasn't already too late.
Not really, I said.
She nodded and started stacking clean plates. I fantasized about actually being friends with Ella and her mom long after I left here and went home. I could come back and visit sometimes. Yeah, and we could have picnics, exchange Christmas cards. I'm so sure. I was totally losing my grip on reality. I had to get out of here. Dr. Martinez put away the clean plates and loaded the dirty ones into the dishwasher.
Do you have a last name?
I thought. Since I didn't have an official identity, there wasn't anything she could do with the information. I rubbed my temples. A headache had been creeping up on me since breakfast. Yeah, I said finally. I shrugged. I gave it to myself. On my 11th birthday, which was also a day I picked for myself, I had asked Jeb about a last name.
I guess I was hoping he would say, "Your name's Batchelder, like me." But he hadn't. He'd said, "You should choose one for yourself." So I thought about it. Thought about how I could fly and who I was. "My last name is Ride," I told Ella's mom. "Like Sally Ride, the astronaut. Maximum Ride." She nodded. "That's a good name. Are there others like you?" she asked. I pressed my lips together and looked away. My head was throbbing. I wanted to tell her. That was the awful part. Something inside me wanted to blurt out everything. But I couldn't. Not after years of Jeb telling me I couldn't trust anybody, ever. "Do you need help?" My eyes flicked back to her face. "Max, with your wings, can you actually fly?"
"Well, yeah," I was startled into saying. "That's me, mouth like a steel trap maximum.
Yep, you have to use all your tricks to get me to talk, jeez. That's what I get for sleeping on a soft bed and eating homey food."
"Really? You can really fly?" She looked fascinated, alarmed, and a little envious.
I nodded. "My bones are thin," I began, hating myself. "Shut up, Max. Thin and light. I have extra muscles, my lungs are bigger, and my heart more efficient, but I need to eat a lot. It's hard." Abruptly, I clammed up, a furious blush heating my cheeks. That, folks, was the most I had ever said to a non-flock member. But when I spilled the beans, I spill big. I might as well have hired a skywriting plane to scrawl, "I'm a mutant freak," in huge letters across the sky.
"How did this happen?" Ella's mom asked softly. My eyes shut of their own volition. If I'd had been alone, I would have put my hands over my ears and hunkered down into a little ball on the floor. Fractured images, memories, fear, pain all came crashing together inside my brain. You think being a regular teenager with growing pains is hard? Try doing it with DNA that's not your own, not even from a mammal. "I don't remember," I told her. It was a lie.
Chapter 41. Dr. Martinez looked distressed.
"Max, are you sure I can't help in some way?"
I shook my head, irritated at myself, irritated at her for bringing all this up. "Nah, it's all over anyway, done, but I have to get out of here. Some friends are waiting for me, it's really important."
"How will you get to them? Can I give you a ride?"
"No," I said, frowning and rubbing my hurt shoulder. "I need to, fly there, but I don't think I can fly yet."
Dr. Martinez creased her forehead, thinking. "It would be dangerous for you to strain your injury before it's healed. I couldn't tell the extent of it, but I could give you a better idea if we had an X-ray."
I looked at her solemnly. "Do you have X-ray vision?" She laughed, startled, and I couldn't help grinning too.
God, Ella had this all the